This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode every Thursday, always available at thehollywoodoutsider.com, iTunes, or Stitcher Radio. My name is Aaron Peterson, and I'll be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider, where I am interviewing Jennifer Kent. She is the writer-director of The Babadook. Now, what is The Babadook, you ask? It's an independent horror film starring Essie Davis and Noah Wiseman as a mother and son forced to confront a horrible monster brought to life through a children's pop-up book known as The Babadook. Even the name of the book should have been a clue, right? Well, Scott and I reviewed this film back on episode 163 of The Hollywood Outsider, but in case you missed it, we loved this movie. Loved it. It was honestly one of the biggest surprises I've had this year. The reason being is The Babadook is kind of a throwback to classic horror films, which relied a lot more on atmosphere, clever camera movements, acting, and very careful sound editing, which is very, very important to me, that creates this feeling of despair. Really, one of the nicest surprises I've had this year. Can't recommend it enough. Jennifer was gracious enough to sit down with us and talk about her new film, which releases to limited theaters and video on demand on November 28th. This is a relatively spoiler-free interview, and I hope you guys like listening to it almost as much as I enjoy doing it. It was really neat to talk to her. Seriously, it's a movie I can't recommend enough to horror fans. It's called The Babadook, and it's out November 28th. Wherever you can find it, be sure to catch it. Right now, listen to my exclusive interview with writer-director Jennifer Kent. Hi, how are you?
Good, Aaron, how are you?
I'm good. You sound like you're in a gothic mansion of some kind.
It's like I've got nothing set up. I'm in amongst boxes.
Are you ready for your release yet?
Yes.
Are you?
I am. I am. It feels like the film's been it's been releasing since May, so I'm more than ready.
I do want to tell you before we start, I'm a huge fan of the movie. It's one of the more pleasant surprises I think I've had this year. Sincerely.
Oh, that's so great. Thank you.
This movie came from a short of yours called Monster. That was the launching pad for the movie. Can you tell me how that worked for you? I mean, how did you go from a short to a feature-length film?
Well, I never intended to make Babadook. I wasn't making Monster to make a feature. I mean, of course, I wanted to make features, but, you know, the trend is these days to kind of have a script, a feature script, and then go, I'm going to make a short to show people what I can do. Mm-hmm. But it really wasn't that way for me. It was, I worked very much from being captivated by an idea. And the idea of this film wouldn't leave me. You know, this story of a person having to face something that was unfaceable. You know, I kind of left it alone and worked on other stuff. And I'd had a number of films almost get made and kind of fell over. I was a bit too ambitious for whatever reason, either financially or otherwise. And this idea just came up, and it seemed simple and pure, and you know, it was contained in a house and had all these qualities. And I thought, oh, I should just explore the idea and see where it goes. And then the script kind of started flowing very easily after that. And you know, a couple of years later, we were in production, so that's how it worked.
Well, that's a lot easier than I thought. Where did the idea for a monster derive from a children's
book?
Well,
no, it wasn't easy. I made it sound really easy.
You sure did.
I made it sound really easy then. It was a nightmare.
A pleasant nightmare, I hope.
Well, yeah. I mean, any filmmaker will tell you that the first film is really a nightmare, but it was great. It happened, put it that way.
So where did the idea come for making a monster movie out of a children's pop-up book? Do you have something against, like, children's pop-up books?
I guess, you know, I always started the film from that woman's story, and I don't know, the world always felt like somehow like a fairy tale, like an old, primal, brutal fairy tale. And I'm really into myths, and I love reading stories. I loved reading stories as a kid. So it became apparent very quickly that that this entity was going to, you know, come into the house via a book and a kid's book. And, you know, yeah, I love kids' illustrations. I love the darker end of those illustrations. Mm-hmm. And I was particularly inspired by Lottie Reiniger, who was a early animator. She made the first ever feature-length animation called Prince Ahmed. It was made, I think, late 20s, maybe early 30s.
It was a long time ago.
Beautiful piece and very savage, but somehow childlike. And I love that quality together. You know, the childlike quality that's actually very sinister. It appeals to me somehow.
And I saw you guys are now selling the book, right? I mean, you recreated it.
We're creating a version of it, yeah, that's got even a few more pages than has in the film. It's going to be something really special and beautiful, and we're bringing Alex back to design some more pop-ups that are going to be crazy. So yeah, we're not definitely making it. We've got a campaign going that it's looking pretty good. I mean, we need to raise 2,000 pre-orders to go ahead, and I think we've got close to, I don't know, close. It's over 800 now, and that's only been 4 days. So, I think we'll get there.
Oh, that's great news. I've personally found myself throughout like the first half of the movie doubting exactly, I guess, what was going on. And I don't want to spoil the movie or anything, but I wasn't sure how much of the film was like a true monster versus how much was psychological, how much was in the characters' heads. Was that something you were intentionally going for, or am I just reading way too much into it?
No, I think definitely. You know, people said to me, is it a supernatural monster, like, is it all in her head or is it real? And I say yes, which kind of irritates people, but I'm saying yes to both because, you know, the psychological place this woman's in is very real. But for her and for her son, that monster is also very real, you know, and so there are a lot of layers to this story if you want to look into it. And it can be, I worked on it so it could be viewed from all angles. You know, if someone wants to see it as just a psychological descent into madness, then that's how they can see it. If they want to see it purely supernatural, that's how they can see it. Or it can be a combination of both. And that was something I worked on very, very carefully in the development of the screenplay.
It was very well done, because I really wasn't sure. And even rewatching it, I kind of had a different feelings about both viewings, I guess, in terms of what I saw.
And you're not. I'm fortunate that I haven't gone crazy, but what I can imagine of that process is exactly what you just described. You know, is this real or am I going crazy? Even if someone, you know, I've read a bit about people going through psychotic episodes. And the confusion of what's real and what's not real is really apparent in that situation. So I guess I wanted to be true to that, too.
Well, it worked. Your two main characters, Essie Davis, and she's the distraught mother dealing with the traumatized son. I thought she was phenomenal. And I thought Noah Wiseman as Samuel is probably, and I mean this sincerely, it's not just because you're here, one of my favorite performances from a child since The Sixth Sense. With a movie like this that is so dependent on...
Oh, wow.
No, that's sincerely, I mean that. With a movie that is so dependent on finding the right actors for these two roles, how did you know that these two were the right pick?
You know, my gut instinct is probably the strongest gift I have, and so sometimes things don't always make sense on the page, but with these two, I just felt it. That's not to say Essie, I didn't have any problem. I've known Essie since we were, you know, at drama school, and I love her, and she's incredibly gifted, performer, very generous as well. And so I had no doubts about her, but, you know, I had the normal amount of doubts, not about Noah, but just about a 6-year-old being able to pull off this task. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a huge role for a 6-year-old. And so I guess on that level, I just had to follow my gut, my finer feeling. You know, I had to follow my gut instinct. And in working with him, I always worked off my instinct as well. So the process with him would change daily in order to, you know, make him feel comfortable and also help me to get what I needed from his performance. So they worked incredibly well together. Having said that, it wasn't just like, oh, we walked on set and, you know, it all happened. No way. I mean, my years of experience as an actor have taught me what exactly an actor needs, and especially a young actor who has had no experience. You know, they're surrounded by cameras and technicians. Oh my God, there's so many opportunities for a six-year-old to lose their focus and, you know, to be intimidated. So we had a very, very thorough three-week preparation of Noah before he entered that set. You know, and that was about making him and I friends and helping him to be really present and responsible for his character and his part of the story. There's a lot of work that went into making that performance. And from Essie as well, you know, she gave so much to Noah to help him feel comfortable and to let fly as Sam. So, you know, a lot of that performance is due to her as much as it is to him.
For me personally, the music and the sound editing, I found really, I guess often in horror films, you find music to either be that the tip-off that bad things are about to happen, or they amplify the cat jumps out of the closet, you know, the boo moments, where I think the Babadook was using the music cues as,
yeah,
as kind of its own character. Like slowly, I just feel like it was part of the movie as opposed to just amplifying certain moments. How difficult is that for you to nail down when to use music?
Well, I learned a lot from watching Hitchcock. You know, he's a master at everything, but particularly sound and music. And, you know, I learned about absence of those things and how powerful that can be. And I wanted to use sound and music to make people insecure, not to make them secure. You know, when you go quiet, quiet, bang, people expect that and they feel comfortable. Even if they get momentarily a fright, you know, the ground is still solid under their feet. Whereas if you use sound to actually mirror how fear feels, you often don't have sound in there. And music was really, I mean, it's very perceptive of you to pick that up. It's like a character. It's like it mirrors what's going on for those characters. And we had a brilliant sound designer and composer who worked very closely together and, you know, and with me, obviously, to create. And the rule was, if we can't tell it with sound, then we go to music. And that's why there's only 10 minutes of music in the whole film, probably, you know, not much more, because it was only when we absolutely had to use music that I would use it. That, again, is an instinctive thing.
That's the number one thing I tell people when they've asked about the movie, is the sound editing is one of the most well done I've seen in a horror movie in a long time.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. You know, it was an obsession for me. I my sound designer, Frank Lipson, said to me, you know, I haven't met a director as obsessed with sound as you, except maybe Andrew Dominik, he worked with a lot as well, who said was equally obsessed, but you know, I don't see it as subservient to picture. It's equal. It's an equal partner, and it's not an afterthought for me. You know, when I was editing picture, I was always hearing the film in my head, and yeah, we spent a lot of time. I mean, there's one scene, you know, where Essie's character is hearing whispering and voices. I mean, we spent almost a week on that. You know, there's a lot of detail in there to make people feel uncomfortable and frightened.
I know we've got to start wrapping up. I've got two more questions. I'll be quick. The first is, I was generally taken aback at how nerve-wracking the movie is. And it's done, like I said, so creatively as opposed to like just gore or cheap thrills. And I'm curious how, for someone like yourself, when you make a horror film, do you go into this conscious of like horror tropes, things you want to either embrace or avoid?
I think there are things, yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I grew up watching Freddy Krueger and all of those wonderful films that, you know, that enlist a lot of tropes. But so does every film. You know, I think what makes it different is, what are you trying to say with the film? And with this story, I always felt clear on what it was I wanted to say, so that whenever choices were made, yeah, okay, I was aware that, you know, I needed to tighten tension, I needed to, you know, do certain things at certain points, but I was never ruled by tropes. I was always ruled by this core story of this woman, and that was what I always paid most attention to. But yeah, you know, you can have fun with horror, and you don't I didn't have to ignore flickering lights and sounds outside doors and things like that. But, you know, it's about feeding it back into that core story and making it meaningful.
I totally agree. It was very well done. So what's next for you? What do you plan on doing next? A romantic comedy, or are you going to stick with horror, or do you even know yet?
Yeah. A romantic comedy where everyone dies. No. I would like to do a black comedy one day, but they're so hard. I think I would have to, you know, it's a big challenge to make something funny. I've got two films that I'm writing, which are not horror, but they're kind of strange and in heightened worlds. I've just come back from America, and I've got like about 25 scripts to read.
Oh, wow.
I'm looking for a project to fall in love with in that regard. And I will take on works originated by other people if I can, you know, if I can make them my own. I won't just take anything, but if I can find something that speaks to me, I'll grab it and run with it.
Well, we're definitely looking forward to it. I have to let you go. I think our time is up. But I just want to say thanks for taking the time to talk to us. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no worries, man. It's a pleasure.
Well, good luck on the release, and talk to you later.
Thanks, man. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. There you go, guys. Jennifer Kent, writer-director of The Babadook, and a director to watch, in my opinion. She mentioned Alfred Hitchcock. How cool is she? She just, like, catapulted to the top of my list because she knows Alfred Hitchcock and respects him and loves him, and she's right. Anybody that's never listened before, he is my favorite director of all time. The Babadook is in theaters and video on demand on November 28th. I don't want to oversell the movie, but it is damn good. It is just that good. Check it out. Definitely worth a chance. Wouldn't hype it if I didn't believe in it. We do wish Jennifer the best of luck with the release. We really don't see enough quality horror films. You know what I mean? I mean, independents, usually when you get a horror film, they're okay. Some of them are decent, but you don't get one that I would consider great, and I consider this one great. We try to let you guys know about them when we see them, so I'm letting you know. Once again, thanks for listening to the Hollywood Outsider podcast. I really hope you've enjoyed this special episode of our show. We try to bring you interviews from filmmakers in the world of independent cinema when we can, and this is one I really wanted you guys to hear, so I really hope you enjoyed it. Let me know your thoughts. Be sure to email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Remember to subscribe and review us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or through whatever podcast app you currently use. Our normal show has a new episode every Thursday and is available at thehollywoodoutsider.com anytime you don't know where to find us. This is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater to see The Babadook, buy some popcorn.